This is Polar Voices. I'm Kelsey Gabrowski. Most people in urban areas are but a short walk away from abundant, nutritious food. But approximately one-fifth of Yukon First Nations people are struggling to get consistent, affordable access to even basic food items. In Nunavut, that number jumps to half. Food security is a significant issue facing Arctic Indigenous peoples, but the causes are complex. Norma Cassie is the director of Indigenous Collaborations with the Arctic Institute of Community-Based Research.
I'm from northern Canada in a community called Old Crow Yukon, and we are people of the lakes. We're Wantatkuchin, that's people of the lakes, and we live in North America's second biggest wetland.
Cassie grew up navigating the peat swamps that sit perched atop the permafrost.
And it's muskeg land. It's not easy to walk on. It's not hard. You have to constantly wear rubber boots.
The wetlands of Cassie's childhood were biologically diverse habitats that attracted enormous flocks of migrating birds.
And they'd just come in blacken the sky, and they'd land all over our lakes, and they'd start singing their songs, and they greet each other. They are so happy to see each other.
She also remembers huge herds of caribou.
I remember my mom laying me on the ground, and I could hear the caribou grunting. She lay me on the ground, and they would just walk by.
But the permafrost that once held the wetlands in place is thawing.
And as I walk around the lakes and the tundra all the time, water is getting over my rubber boots all the time, and I keep telling my mom, "Mom, there's so much water on our trails, like what's going on, you know?" And she said, "Well, things are changing, it's getting too hot." And that was like 30 years ago.
Today, the story is magnified. Cassie describes how permafrost endangers their way of life as people of the lakes.
The permafrost has melted so bad, so much, and there's so much water that the lakes are draining away. Those big lakes are now draining away, and people don't go out there anymore.
The 2010 documentary, Our Changing Homelands, Our Changing Lives, outlines how a large portion of Old Crow's Zelma Lake drained suddenly in 2007. In 2011, Yukon News reported that Zelma and another lake disappeared over a few weeks, when permafrost-reinforced banks gave way and the water poured out into area streams. This changing landscape impacts caribou, too. Many caribou herds are rapidly declining across the Arctic, but the porcupine caribou herd remains strong at approximately 170,000 animals, largely because of activists like Cassie. Although the porcupine herd is still thriving, their migration patterns have been strongly affected, and the huge herd that used to feed on her family's land no longer enters the area.
Willows have grown so thick over all the caribou food in the places that caribou used to come and eat and graze for days and days and days.
Craig Gerlach is the academic coordinator at the University of Calgary Office of Sustainability. He often meets with northern communities to talk about the availability of traditional foods.
One of the challenges with Alaska Native communities is that those systems, especially upriver, where there's not a lot of country food available in the first place, and now it's very expensive to get to because of the price of fuel. In the past, they would just move someplace different where the resources were. You know, if they're not here, folks would move there. But now they live in permanent villages. And so that flexibility to respond to change has been significantly reduced.
Cassie conducts community-based research on the health issues northern inhabitants face, including food availability. She uses the recommendations of elders to develop strategies for northern communities.
Hardest question that we ask the old ones is that how do you see your people surviving through all the changes that you have seen and witnessed and experienced in your life? What would you like to say to your people to survive long term? So that's a very tough question, and they take a while sometimes to answer it. Some of them are in tears because they've seen such abundance in the past and now there's hardly any. And then they worry about their future of their grandchildren. They worry very much but they come up with strategies because they have lived also through times of famine.
Language revitalization is one tool to ensure traditions do not pass away. Elder Roy David Sr. offers an example from his Tetlin dialect of the Upper Tanana language.
It's not like before. When we teach young people how to hunt, we name, if we shoot the ducks, you know, we name the ducks for them. If mallard, we call Aicho, you know.
Preserving language and culture is an important component of the resilience Gerlach describes, a way to pass down knowledge and ways of living. Indigenous communities are also faced with the challenge of adapting to decreased food availability in the wake of climate and cultural change.
I remember one elder told me one time, he said, I don't want scientists to come out here anymore and talk to me about climate change. I know the climate's changing. He said, they can design experiments, and if they fail, they just walk away from them. He said, every day when we go to harvest food from the country, traditional foods, that's an experiment. And if we fail, we just die.
The late and revered Berkman Silas, an elder from Minto, observed that many ducks and fish disappeared from around his village.
People used to ask me, where's the fish? Where's the game that we live on? They think I know it all, but you don't know it all. You just know so much.
Philip Charette, director of the Department of Alaska Native Studies and Rural Development at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, talks about his own childhood experiences.
And just in my lifetime, I've seen major changes in our river system with the channels and the channels jumping back and forth. My grandpa was so used to having multiple places, so if this didn't work for the springtime, then they would move there. And if that place was bad, then they would move to another spot.
But permanent housing and land claims make it difficult for modern communities to pick up and move. Gerlach says that fish play a vital role in the northern diet. He calls it the corn of the north. But governmental regulations limit when indigenous people can fish.
If they're counting fish at Pilot Station, for example, and then making a decision about whether or not to close the fishery, everybody upriver goes without fish.
Lake fish are also adapting to a changing climate. Heidi Swanson is an assistant professor and university research chair at the University of Waterloo. She studies how climate change affects mercury concentrations in lakes.
And there's been this huge historical context of people kind of getting scared off their traditional foods because of contaminants. And so I think it's really important to get a handle on what the risks and benefits of eating country foods are, which isn't my area, that's one step beyond what I look at, but also why mercury levels are high in some lakes, low in other lakes, and what's going to happen with climate change.
Swanson's been working with a community in the Detcho region of Northwest Territories. She teams up with a human health researcher to compare the amount of mercury in a community's fish to the amount of healthy fatty acids.
A lot of people think of the Arctic as a really pristine place. And so people are surprised sometimes to hear that there's a lot of contaminants in certain areas of the north. And I'm often asked, where does the mercury come from? And the mercury comes from the south, for the most part, from burning of fossil fuels. Coal-fired power plants are the largest mercury source.
Permafrost thaw is a small but increasing source of mercury.
It's one of those things where you think it's really unfair. You know, there's people that rely on the land for their food sources, and those are being contaminated, not like by actions that are not their own.
Cassie notes that it is not just the north that is affected by climate change.
Alberta, British Columbia, and Saskatchewan were on fire this summer. Tremendous droughts.
And these droughts and fires are destroying huge crops of grain and produce.
So Canada together and all of us need to come to the realization that, you know, we have to adapt. They have to adapt. Not just us. It's not just people in the Arctic. It's people everywhere.
To learn more about these researchers and community leaders, or to listen to previous episodes of this program, visit the Polar Voices page at thepolarhub.org. Polar Voices is produced by the UN Museum of the North in collaboration with the Arctic Institute of North America as part of the Polar Learning and Responding to Climate Change Education Partnership.